Welcome to the Mölnlycke Healthcare Partner Connections Podcast. My name is Kendra Brown, and I have the privilege today of talking with Dr. Charlene Singh about navigating quality measures, including mitigating risk in healthcare. Before we get started, Dr. Singh, if you could please introduce yourself and tell all of our listeners more about who you are and what you do.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. This is really an honor to be able to speak to your audience. So I'm a registered nurse as my foundational training. And then over the last 30 years now, it's hard to believe it's been 30 years, I've gone on to do other things. And so I am a family nurse practitioner. I have my PhD in healthcare services, and I also have an MBA. I've worked in inpatient, outpatient, partnered with big acute care centers in improving quality. And currently, my primary role is the program director of the DNP-FNP program at UC Davis, California. And as you know, the DNP portion of that FNP program is primarily focused on quality improvement in healthcare across all areas of practice.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for providing us that overview. You have a tremendous amount of experience, and so I'm really excited to learn more about your experiences and how we can help others to achieve some of the things that you've achieved. All right, so let's set the stage. So Dr. Singh, can you give us a quick overview of why quality measures are really critical in today's landscape? You know, I know there's a lot happening, you know, across the board in healthcare. So we'd just love to know your perspective on why you think quality measures matter, and then also how they can impact both patient care and financial performance.
Yeah, that's a great question. Quality has always been there, especially in the healthcare in the U.S. We have great metrics that we measure ourselves in, whether it's door-to-needle times, sepsis rates, length of stay. Quality measures at the surface level gives you an idea of how you're performing, is what we think of it. But really, quality measures, when you look below the surface, gives you a lot of information. Because in order to meet certain metrics, everything in the organization has to be copacetic and working well together, so that quality metric, that number, it seems like it's just a benchmark that you're meeting or surpassing. However, it tells a bigger picture of all the teams are working congruently together, the policies and procedures are in place, systems are talking to each other. So it gives you a lot more information when you know what you're looking for. And so they really matter for leadership to be able to get a quick glance of where they are flowing and doing well, and also where there can be concerns coming up, which may also give insight to bigger concerns. So one of those is where you asked about patient care. So when you are meeting your quality metrics, you can be feeling comfortable that you are doing no harm to your patients, and ideally the morale of your staff is high. And for financial performance, you can have a sense of, okay, you're meeting quality metrics for patient care outcomes, which are very much tied to financial expenditures. And so you also have a sense of you are performing well financially, and hopefully you are not spending an extraordinary amount to meet those metrics. But it gives you a roadmap to being asking that question, how are we doing fiscally?
That's fantastic. I really appreciate you providing, you know, that patient perspective as well as the financial performance perspective, mm-hmm. especially in light of all the different challenges that many healthcare systems are facing today, right? Cost and price are those mm-hmm. factors that are at the forefront, right? As right. supply challenges are happening, et cetera. Yeah. So kind of thinking a little bit more about that roadmap that you referred to, can you share where you think healthcare organizations fall short? Like, what is the challenge that you've seen over the years when it comes to quality measures around missing the mark? And what risk does that create for an organization?
You know, over the years, I see it, and it's a repeated pattern. You know, there'll be an organization, regardless of the size of it or which community it's located in, There'll be an initiative to save costs. And so you'll hear that conversation, okay, we have to save 3% or 5% or 1%. It's a percentage. And then a leadership is given that directive. And then they go back out and then they look to see where they can reduce costs. And they don't necessarily look to see at the domino effect of where the decision they've made. And so we will see that commonly in areas where things seem very benign. It's a small product. It's not, it, there's a real, there's a lot cheaper alternative to it. And what ends up happening is that if you follow that organization, if they haven't made a mindful decision of where they're going to make their financial changes, you can follow their trajectory and you'll see that their quality metrics start to fail. And leadership has perhaps changed. People forget the decisions they've made, and now they've really gotten into this situation where they are missing their benchmark metrics, whether they're comparing themselves against other facilities or whether they're meeting insurance metrics, patient metrics, outcome metrics. And so then what they find is that now they're being either penalized or their care is actually costing a lot more. So I see that pitfall and I see the risks of it and see it repeatedly with organizations.
That's very interesting that you say you see it repeatedly. And I think the tension between like clinical outcomes and economic outcomes or economic impact is something that's ongoing, right? And so when you say repeatedly, can you describe a moment when there was an aha, where you like, where it really clicked for you that, okay, I need to focus more on these quality measures, or I need to communicate more strategically the impact of these quality measures? Is there a moment in time when it happened for you where it clicked?
Yeah, it did. It did. And I didn't realize that that was my aha moment when I was in the moment, because it happened to be while I was in the PhD program and thinking about finances and quality outcomes. And what I, for me, my area of research and work is primarily been with pressure injury prevention. And that aha moment came when that directive came to save money, or just, we got to reduce our budget. And what I saw was that no one was really noticing that there was a huge spend in one area, and there was a really minimal spend in another area. But there was a way to bridge that. And if we just adjusted what we were spending, we would like, that was, the hypothesis was that we would improve patient outcomes and decrease overall spending. And it was quite phenomenal by how much the savings was and the exponential increase in patient outcomes and patient satisfaction. So that was my aha moment there. And it just happened to be that I was in a really focused, guided moment with mentors on how to critically think and how to evaluate. So I was really fortunate to have that opportunity.
That is a wonderful example. And I love that it happened when you were getting your PhD. And so now just thinking about like proactive strategy. So having that aha moment and understanding how to bridge the gap, right? And just basically learning how to communicate how the two collide and can provide maximum impact. Can you share some effective strategies that you think hospitals can implement to improve their quality scores while mitigating compliance and financial risk and all these other factors that can be in the mix?
Yeah, I love this question. It's one of the areas that I think we can really work collaboratively together within the hospital, any type of organizational system, where we break down the silos. So it's no longer that it's just purchasing, it's just clinical, and not having one clinical representative on the purchasing side of things, but really coming together and being fully transparent of where do we have opportunities to improve outcomes, and how can we do this looking across the organization. And what is interesting is that you may find that the pitfall, like you asked about, the pitfall may be something as very minor as the time of the delivery to the doc and how that impacts the flow of when a product arrives to the floor. And then the eventual outcome of that is that there's a missed opportunity to implement an intervention that improves patient outcomes. And when we work in our silos, we never see that full picture. And sometimes it's very hard if there is a initiative to improve outcomes and the team that's working on that initiative doesn't represent fully all areas of the organization. It becomes very much a this is a nursing project, or this is a physician model project, or this is a leadership project. And so one of the strategies is to bring all the different members of of what makes a hospital work together to be on that team.
That's great. You know, hearing about silos, I can't think of any time when a silo is a good thing. So when you think about bringing all these teams together, like who should lead that? Is it one or two particular people, or is it a particular department? Like, what are your thoughts on who has the responsibility per se of bringing all these teams together to collaborate?
You know, that's a good, you know, it really comes down to that chief financial officer, chief executive officer, you know, the chief nursing officer. They have a 360-degree view of the organization most times. And it's really great when they establish teams and direct teams. But sometimes you actually need a consultant to be coming in from the outside who can really take an objective view of all areas and all departments. And the piece to that is that healthcare is so complex, patient care is so complex, and sometimes you need that consultant to come in because they are fully focused on that one outcome. Whereas your own staff members, you know, whether they're in leadership or whether they're at the bedside, they are multitasking. And so if you have a really focused outcome or initiative that you have, so for example, if it's pressure injuries and you're like, we want to decrease them by 20% over the year, and you're going to appoint X person to head up this initiative, then it may be very helpful to have that consultant be working with them. And again, it's one of those things where it looks like it's upfront expenditure, but then when you look at it over the long term, the rewards on that, what we have seen over and over again in the literature and in small projects across the country, is that the return on that initial investment is exponential.
Fantastic. No, I totally get that and understand that. Sometimes it's good to have somebody from the outside with an objective view provide that perspective, but yet and still, it has to be led by the leadership, right? They have to champion it. I understand that completely. So, just thinking about, you know, consultants and data, can you share a little bit more about how you think healthcare leaders can better leverage data and analytics around quality improvement and also to ensure accountability, right? Like, once you have the data, how do you ensure everyone's accountable for the role that they play and getting the numbers down, for example?
Oh yeah, so data is one of my favorite things to work with, and I really like secondary data. I like to retrospectively look to see what the story is and then bring that data that we have and pair it up with what were the characteristics of the organization at that time, and then look at that data in real time today and say, well, are we the same organization? Or are we a different organization than when we were from when this the data that we're looking at, and what kind of organization are we going to be in the future? And so what that translates to is, you know, let's say, for example, you're a small community hospital where you have high nursing turnover because, you know, that is a hospital that where nurses are coming, getting their experience, and then moving on to another hospital. Or you just are located in an area where you're relying on travelers and staff that is not living in the community. Well, then are you going to be that same organization 5 years from now? And so if you are going to be that same organization, the characteristics are still going to be there, then you have to look at that data to say, okay, this is the reality of our situation. This is what the data is telling us. How do we make changes within this situation that serves this organization better, right? And then and it leads directly into accountability, because that's partially when you look at data and you dive in deep, you're taking away any cover, Right. You're not at that point, you don't have any excuses. You're not trying to reason out of poor performance. You're just really looking at that data and going, this is what the story is. And we have to ask ourselves in that mind frame of accountability, this may not be what we want to be, but this is what our situation is presenting us with. And so now how do we work around this, right? And that can be very hard. That's hard work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you want to take data and just look at it without diving deep into the circumstances around it, which becomes even harder work. So, you know, especially when we're talking about pressure injuries, you have to really dive into each incident to understand the story behind it. And again, that goes back to the common pitfalls and proactive strengths. We're, bringing in a consultant to be able to partner and work and have that objectivity. Because, if you are working, let's say your lead person is going to be the intensive care unit leadership, perhaps it's hard for them to be able to look at that and say, oh, wow, 40% of the pressure injuries came from our unit, right? That's a hard ask of individuals. So bad data collected is not going to be helpful, but really diving into the data to understand it improves that accountability and can help drive the quality improvement initiatives.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And I think that the need for data exists across industries, right? Not just in healthcare, but across mm-hmm. industries. And speaking of data, I know that you are very published. Can you share a little bit about your most recent publication and what you've been working on?
Yeah, so it's been really fun for the last 5-6 years. I know that fun and last 5-6 years don't usually go together because of what we experienced in healthcare in the pandemic. But the only reason why I say positive, because when I started an initiative in a small community hospital of reducing pressure injuries, we relied heavily on the evidence that exists in the literature and what we knew to be true within using the lean model and the approach. We weren't expecting this challenge of the pandemic and the acuity, but we kept going with our quality improvement initiative that we knew was going to be over 5 years. And so we went with it throughout the pandemic. And to see that basing interventions on evidence-based practice that was with evidence-based products and processes, we not only reduced pressure injury rates for this one particular organization, but we maintained it throughout the pandemic. And so it again reinforced the work that has been done prior to my work and across the globe of really identifying what is the evidence for certain products that's going to mitigate pressure injuries, and what are the processes that work, and what are the cost benefits. So that's been the really fun and exciting stuff that I've been working on for the last 5-6 years now, and look forward to continuing to partner with organizations to help them understand where their pitfalls are, what could be their proactive strategies, and how can they use their data to make decisions.
That's excellent. And I know for the work that you've done over the last 5 or 6 years, you stated working with particular products, et cetera. Just to hit on that piece, when you think about product, when you think about supplier and manufacturer, are there mm-hmm. any insights, or is there a main insight that you could provide to our listeners about that in terms of the impact that it can play on mitigating risk?
What's interesting is back in 2012, actually, I might have been even 2009, a really phenomenal CNO at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, Pam Wells, asked me, what are one of the reasons you choose the products that you're choosing for the children's hospital? And I said, well, this particular product has a good evidence, partners with clinicians, and it's primarily made in North America. And so when economic turbulence came up at that time, she was really like the idea that we were using products that was primarily made in North America. And now it's, almost 15 years later, and that's holding true, that working with companies whose products have, good R&D, repeated performance with in research studies done, you know, globally by different researchers, held up through the pandemic is what I would say now, and then primarily made in North America. It seems to hold up during economic turbulence, during whatever else is happening, and even during things of natural disaster, whether it's been, you know, bad weather, fires, whatnot. Looking very deeply into a partnership with a product company is equally as important as what you're doing within the organization is what I have found.
That is very insightful, and I appreciate you diving into that. And so as we close and wrap up our podcast and time, thank you again, Dr. Singh, for spending time with me today and our listeners. You know, as we think about healthcare and how it's evolving, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, what trends should organizations be preparing for? Like, is there one key action that you can think of that every leader should take today? And this is specific to risk. We know risk can be associated with a lot of different factors, but what trends should they be preparing for, and what key action would you recommend that they take today to improve the outcomes in their facilities?
Yeah, I think one of those is the trend to really firmly acknowledge is that the consumer who is your patient in your organization, whether you're in acute care, post-acute care, community, they have access to knowledge. So if for a moment you think that you can use a subpar product and be okay with it, you're taking a huge risk, because it's the information that people have access to today, they can very quickly identify if your organization is committed to quality or not committed to quality. So that's a trend that I think leadership should really embrace, is looking at their processes and their quality of service from the lens of a consumer, and really acknowledge that they have access to information that they didn't have previously. So that's a huge trend that I think leadership should really acknowledge and try to build that into their decision making as they are making decisions for how to lead organizations.
Fantastic. Well, this has been wonderful. Just as I was listening to you, just thinking about consumers or patients having access to information, that has significantly accelerated with AI, right? You know, it's so easy to initially, you know, is going to Google, but now you can go to ChatGPT or whatever AI resource you use and ask questions. So I definitely agree with you that knowing this about patients is really important to make decisions based on that. And so this concludes our time together, Dr. Singh. I really appreciate, you know, your contributions to the areas that you're focused on, particularly in pressure injury prevention, and also just providing insights on how healthcare leaders can mitigate risk. And ultimately, for all of our listeners today, thank you for joining the Mölnlycke Healthcare Partner Connections podcast, and we will see you on the next podcast. Take care.
Thank you.